Chapter 4. Sturndrang, the Underhive of Molior. The crash site reached at least 15 meters in all directions. Debris littered the ground, great streams of it like mechanized intestine. In the hive levels above, detritus hung from girders and gantries, serving as evidence of the ship's difficult landing. Ship no longer, it was now a partially destroyed wreck. Scorch marks blackened its flanks, deeper and longer on the right-hand side where the engine had exploded. Dust, grit, and dented fuselage, half exposed to the bare metal, obscured much of the gunship's iconography. Its flattened nose cone, shattered glacis, and ruptured right wing made even identifying its class a challenge. It was a Thunderhawk, a gunship with a winged lightning bolt symbol described in black on its side amidst a field of bile yellow. The amount of damage inflicted on the ship, together with the obvious hostility of its impromptu landfall, made it even more surprising that at least one of its occupants had survived. Exor emerged from behind the ship, having been to examine the engine damage. He shook his head. The mecha dendrite tools he had been using to perform the rituals of function retracting in their haptic implant sleeves as he breathed.
Omnisaya, I have no idea how he landed this ship and lived.
His shock betrayed his youth, as did his voice. It had the mechanized cadence of most tech marines, only lighter. Exor was far from being a veteran, unlike his two much more grizzled companions.
What else? Asked Agatone, his deep voice slightly muted inside the folds of his hood.
He looked sidelong at the dead hivers they had left in their wake and considered hiding the bodies. As space marines, they had little to fear from the Underhive's inhabitants, but in a large enough pack, they might prove problematic, and dead always brought carrion in a place like this. He returned his attention to Exor.
It won't fly again, declared the tech marine. One engine is gone, along with the wing on the right-hand side. Weapon systems and all forms of cogitation are defunct. Landing stanchions are wrecked, and the hull's structural integrity needs a complete rearmor before it could ever be considered for atmospheric flight. In short, the ship is dead, Captain. Machine spirit and all.
Agatone grunted as he considered the ramifications. With his own visual assessment, he added what he could to the information Exor had provided. Scratches marred the exterior hull that were not a result of crash damage, stripping the paintwork to bare metal in places. As well as the crushed forward aspect of the ship, the rear was also badly damaged, its exit ramp ripped away and long gone. A gaping hole where the ramp should have been provided access to a charnel house of bodies within. Some looked like battle dead, ferried from Nocturne, but dying before their apothecary could minister to them or retrieve any gene seed from the truly lost causes. Like the ship, they wore armor of yellow livery with the black winged bolt symbol on their shoulder guards. Closer inspection had revealed the dead had been gnawed upon where the flesh was exposed, as if by whatever carrion eaters lived this far down in the city's underhive. Agatone approached the rear hatch. Zartath had gone back inside the ship, disappearing through a ragged hole in the fuselage that led to darkness and the reek of blood. Trusting the dead gangers had no other scouts in this section of the Underhive, he drew back his hood. It itched, and he was used to being bareheaded. Even the stifling confines of his battle helm would have been preferable. But they had left their armor aboard the frigate that had laid anchor in Sturndrang's upper atmosphere. Agatone had insisted they would be less conspicuous that way. He felt almost naked without his full battle plate, having to settle for body carapace and half greaves normally reserved for sparring.
A storm cloak completed the disguise, concealing their armor, but unable to mask the salamander's sheer size. Their equipment also came without battle helm, which meant ear beads for Vox, no tactical data feed, and no respirator. So there was no filtration of the underhive atmosphere, which stank. It was redolent of petrochem, physoline, and low-grade promethium, amongst other synthetically produced combustibles. Despite the rank odor, it failed to conceal the stench of putrefaction emanating from inside the ship's hold. Agatone scowled.
Reeks of decay. Fecal matter also. Sections of the hold are swimming in the crud. Indigenous?
The voice of Zartath snorted with amusement.
I doubt the malevolence soiled their armor, though with your errant Drake amongst them and bent on killing, some may have.
He snorted again, in derision this time.
They don't know from savagery.
Agatone ignored the feral boast, though it was becoming all too common since they had made planetfall.
Was our quarry wounded? He asked. Beyond whatever injury he sustained during the crash. If he was struggling with an injury, it would make hunting him easier, his pattern more predictable. He would seek out a medic or whatever sore bones passed for thus in this decrepit burrow.
A low snarl answered.
Unlikely. Everything I see suggests he took them by surprise. He killed them quick, but painful.
Exor joined Agatone. The tech marine activated his Auspex. Bioscan reads negative. Blood's all theirs. Some samples from the hold might yield more, though.
As I said,
Zartath growled, unable to disguise the contempt he felt towards the tech marine.
I don't need the artifice of your Martian masters to tell me that.
Despite his youth, or possibly because of it, Exor rose to Zartath's slight as he emerged from the hole in the fuselage. Every day I am reminded of how much of a beast you are, Zartath. Cursed, I've heard some say. Half human. Where Zartath was wiry and gaunt, Exor had flatter, plainer features. In keeping with the traditions of the Magos of the Adeptus Mechanicus, he carried several augmetic and cybernetic implants that gave him a partially mechanized appearance, and these were made all the more apparent because of the stripped-down armor he was wearing. But this was not the only marked difference between them. Exor's skin, much like his captain's, was onyx black, and his eyes a deep fire red. Zartath's skin was pale under his cloak and armor. Although he had sworn fealty to his adopted chapter, even undergone its rite of pain to become one of them, he was still not of Nocturne. His eyes still blazed, though, but not with the captured fire of a Nocturnian heritage and a genetic first-founding ancestry, but with an intensity of purpose and spirit that had seen him live where others had perished in the slave arenas of the Dark Elder. In the earliest years, not long after the war on Nocturne, the Great Dragon Strife, as some refer to it, Agatone had found it difficult to trust the mutant. He questioned his inclusion in the chapter, an issue deliberated over for years in the Pantheon Council. But now he was forced to admit that if properly directed and motivated, Zartath could be a loyal and potent asset. Even so, he still needed a strong hand, now and again. A leash, according to his more vocal detractors. Agatone did not like to think of him as some hound. It felt disrespectful, but it was not always easy. Zartath bared his teeth and claws.
Let him up, said Agatone, brooking no argument. Sure or not, Exor needs to examine the ship.
Bone claws retracting into his gauntlets, Zartath leapt down. The ossified growths were the physical manifestation of his mutancy, a gross distortion of the radius or ulna, Only surgical X-ray or autopsy would reveal which with any certainty. Exor had expressed which methodology he would recommend to discern an answer. Zartath's mandible bone and teeth were also unusual. The canines overlong and pronounced like fangs. His mouth, both inside and his lips, was black. So too his tongue, which tapered to a sharp point like a dagger. Some chapters, such as the Marines Malevolent, would hunt down and execute what they regarded as deviations from the Emperor's genetic design, a template that had regrettably been diluted over the millennia since its initial perfecting. None now existed who could restore it, and so there were those amongst the Adeptus Astartes regarded as cursed. And although the Salamanders did not ostensibly count themselves amongst these Puritans, there were still some for whom the presence of such an obvious mutant element in their ranks was not only distasteful, it was also dangerous. It had made the ex-Black Dragon's transition to the Salamanders difficult. As if to emphasize the fact, Zartath glared at the Tech Marine as they passed each other, his body almost shaking with repressed violence.
"Shall we see who is the more human, brother?"
Zartath snarled, showing his savage nature again.
"Let me cut the metal from your flesh. I doubt the remainder would amount to much. Certainly there'd be no spine amongst the offal."
Exor had climbed halfway into the ship when the augmetic replacement of his right eye flared, crosshairs interleaving over the iris and cornea as he accessed an internal targeting matrix. His right hand, a bionic, strayed towards the holstered bolt pistol.
"Cease!"
Agatone told them both. The two had been at each other's throats since planetfall, and it was trying the captain's patience. In truth, each now came from a different world. Zartath, though he had adopted the Salamanders as his chapter now and wore their deep green livery, was still a Black Dragon. Not merely that, he was also a mutant and still prone to volatility. Exor was younger, not long returned from Mars, where he had been privy to the secrets of the Adeptus Mechanicus, and emerged a fresh-forged Tech Marine. Like Zartath, his loyalty was irrevocably split, partly to Nocturne and the Chapter, partly to the Red Martian world. Conflict, Agatone reminded himself again, was inevitable.
"I brought you here to hunt, Zartath," he said. "So hunt! Find his trail!"
Like a hound brought to heel, the ex-Black Dragon nodded and obeyed. Alone for the moment, Agatone considered their surroundings and the likelihood of the success of their mission. Sturndrang was a heavily industrialized world of vast factorums and massively overpopulated hive cities. Utilizing the rich mineral deposits of its mines and other subterranean works, the majority of its populace served the throne through intense manual labor in the production of material for the never-ending imperial war effort. Shells, tank armor, glacis for aircraft, vulcanized rubber, plastic, fuel, teeth for chain weapons, even rivets were all manufactured on Sturndrang in one of its 23 hives. When they had made their descent through low atmosphere, the Salamanders had been granted their first proper look at their hunting ground, a smog-choked vista of blister-encrusted spires on a plain of irradiated wasteland. Sturndrang was a war world in many respects, and a standing army was garrisoned on it to protect its highly valuable assets. Amongst the domes and blisters, the subspires and annexed mezzanine levels jutting from the ugly sloped flanks of the hives, Agatone had seen bastions and blockhouses. Landing pads, even a sizable orbital dock, were in evidence. Search lamps strafed the night that gripped Sturndrang in an eternally clenched fist, and patrols in light gun cutters or atmospherically sealed speeders made regular passes to ensure continued compliance and maximum civilian efficiency. Agatone had come from a world of industry too. Nocturne, although much less stable than Sturndrang, an alpha classification death world in fact, was not so dissimilar in its industrial endeavour. It was, however, entirely less like a sprawling slave camp. As they made planetfall, careful to avoid the patrols and the strafing lights, Agatone found the idea of Sturndrang disgusted him. A quirk of his humanitarian nature, he supposed, but to inflict such squalor and deprivation on a populace seemed little better than tyranny to his mind. It was then he was reminded of just how large and unruly the galaxy was. So many worlds, so many interpretations of the Imperium's law.
"So much corruption,"
he had muttered angrily, and without the taint of ruin in sight. And beneath these very literal hives of industry were the substrata, those sectors that had been constructed upon to serve the fervent desire of Sturndrang's overseers for greater production, larger output. Over centuries and millennia, they had sunk deeper and deeper into the earth, until few alive could recall what their original purpose and function had been. Here and there, as the salamanders had descended into the underhive, experiencing the squalor and desperation of its underclasses for themselves, was evidence of former glories. A mosaic floor, an ornate fountain, long parched, a marble staircase, a grand hall stripped of its gilding, a begrimed sign bearing some proud industrial motto or rubric. Wars, natural disasters, power grabs, all and more had served to transform Sturndrang during its long history of imperial fealty. Fortunes and landscape had changed. One thing that had not was the production of materiel. As Agatone stood by the wreckage of the Malevolence ship, one his former battle brother had somehow guided to this devastated landing, his tech marine now examined, he considered the warren they were searching. Labyrinthine did not even begin to describe its complexity. He hoped Tsugan was dead. He would wish he was dead by the time Agatone finally caught up with him.